Get ready.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the Weekly Cooldown. I am Comedy Jace, your host for another episode. Paul is not joining us this week. He's tied up with Extra Life. If you're joining us for the first time, this is the show where we get to know the gaming news of the week and we get to know our guest. It is episode 204 of the Weekly Cooldown and it is November 3rd. We're going to jump right into headlines because I have a guest who's never been here before and I'm very excited about that. So, without further ado, let's get right into it. A 28-second teaser for Metal Gear Solid Legacy series is available on Konami's YouTube channel. In the video, David Hayter, the iconic voice behind Solid Snake in most Metal Gear Solid-related media, narrates briefly about the popularity of Metal Gear while clips of previous games flash on screen. He ends the video by saying, "I hope you're ready, because this is only the beginning." Which fans have speculated to mean that David Hayter may return as the voice of the iconic Snake or Solid Snake in some capacity, though nothing has been confirmed. Otherwise, the Metal Gear Solid Master Collection Volume 1 is now available. As for Volume 2, Konami has teased that there should be one on the way. Twitch is pulling support for the version of the app that is currently available on the Nintendo Switch. The support page for the app states that the support will end for the Switch version early next year. Those who currently have the app downloaded on Switch will lose access on January 31st, 2024. There have been complaints about the app as it is on the Switch, including not being able to broadcast, subscribe, or even read chat. Those still interested in trying the app for whatever reason will have until November 6th to download it. And finally, the former vice president of Riot Games, Greg Street, has left the company earlier this year, before he could see the studio's League of Legends MMORPG that he was spearheading take off. However, this week, Mr. Street has appeared to tell us all about a new MMO he's launching with a new studio partnering with NetEase. The studio is called Fantastic Pixel Castle, and their first project is a big-budget MMO. Street said in a video posted to YouTube that while MMOs are challenging to create, Fantastic Pixel Castle is fully remote and plans on incorporating as much feedback from the community as possible. Street himself has experience in MMOs, serving as the lead systems designer on World of Warcraft. The new MMO project by Street is codenamed Ghost and is set in a, quote, new fantasy universe. Some concept art shows tons of floating aisles and medieval-style gear, but not much more than that just yet. And those are some of the headlines for this week. Folks, we're back after a lengthy, not lengthy, but what felt like a lengthy Hispanic Heritage Month, Latin American Heritage Month, and a lengthy break thereafter. We needed a few weeks. I work for a union. Working for unions is hard. and I had a lot of work to do. So I caught up on my work and now we're back. Except for, of course, Paul, who is busy with Extra Life. If you want to know where to find him on Extra Life things, be sure to follow him on Paul's Rockin' Twit on Twitter. Comedy Jace Gaming on Twitter for me and WK Cooldown. For the Weekly Cooldown Twitter, and you know, we'll tweet about it, I'm sure we will. Anyways, who's here? What's my guest name? Introduce yourself, please.
Oh, okay. I was like, wait, what's my name? What is my name? I am Monera Salraset. Hello.
Hi, welcome.
It's nice to meet you for the first time.
Nice to meet you.
Never seen you before. I was dragged off the street.
I found you and I said, "Hey, you look like you know about video games." On the street.
I was just only holding a box of a cardboard box for a computer, you just assumed.
That's correct. I did assume. And so what you're saying is I've made a grave error? Is that what...
I've never heard of a game in my life before. I'm kidding. Oh, my God.
Mana Rizal Reset, welcome in. Mana, can I ask you about your name? Well, where did this spawn from? Where did it come from?
Oh, God. That is like a 12-year conversation, but I'll make it very, very brief. Basically, I used to write stories, but I'm not really good at writing. I have like dyslexia, essentially. Well, I do, but it makes writing really hard, and also just articulating my speech sometimes or getting my ideas down is difficult. But I learned that I could make it through music. So instead of writing out my stories, I would compose them. So Mana Rizal is actually comes from these two gods whose nations were at war in my story. And then they realized that their people were dying all because of their, like, feud. They were ex-lovers, by the way. Mm. And in order to reunite, they tried to unite the people, but they couldn't. And so they were like, what are we going to do? How do we get them together? So they basically gave birth to this new goddess that would usher in happiness, like a time of peace and entertainment and fun and happiness and good times and love. And her name is Mana Rizal. And I love the name so much. And I was like, you know, this character is like, it's me. It's me. And so I kind of took that character and I was like, girl, it's not even a character anymore. That's just who I am.
Very good. I love that. I love that. Especially the kind of media, I guess, journey that you went through, right? First it was writing, then it was music. And now you've also transported it into video games. Speaking of, please tell us about your what you do on the internet and how you do it and all that good stuff.
So online, I am a VTuber, plural. Question mark?
Okay.
Multiple VTubers. I have like three characters that I play. Each one devised from my lore, if that is what you want to call it. But all different ways of me expressing my gender identity and sexuality, basically, and also helping other people do the same thing. But I stream on Twitch, and I also have a musical project called Dreamscape Nexus. We make music that basically tells a story. And yeah, that's what I do.
Very cool. Very cool. What do you do? What kind of stuff do you play on Twitch?
On Twitch, I am a variety streamer, so you already know that means that you don't know what you're going to get till I press play. But mostly, I've been raised on RPGs, so I do like to play, like, you know, good old Final Fantasy here and there, old school retro RPGs like Chrono Trigger. I salvaged my PlayStation 2. We had a flood in Florida not too long ago. But I took some of my old consoles with me, so I've been trying to play some older games on my PlayStation 2 and stream them, and that's been really fun. But yeah, I'm a big RPG head. Life Sims, you'll get some really out-of-the-box games, like we were playing Yakuza 0 today, and I played a game called Galgun a few days ago.
Galgun, yeah. Yeah. Why? Wait. Why the laughter?
I wasn't prepared for the absurdity that game was.
Oh, fair. No, you're right. You're absolutely right about that.
From what it was described, I was like, oh, this will be really cute. I get to shoot people that are in love with me, like with love beams. Oh, that's so fun. And I was like, oh, this is one of those games. A Discord type of game.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not necessarily for Twitch. You can play it on Twitch, but it's not necessarily for Twitch. It's for it's for an after dark audience.
Most definitely.
That no one should really see, but you know. We've watched anime before. We know what anime is about sometimes. It's certainly not about the anime. It's
right.
Very good, very good. So you said you've been playing Yakuza, you played Galgun, you played a bunch of stuff this week. Have you been playing anything off stream that you're willing to share with us?
Off stream, oh gosh, like I feel like everything that I play off stream, I usually am like, you know what, I gotta like play this to show people like what it's like. So it starts off stream and it slowly becomes on stream. And that was first Reverse 1999, which is a mobile game. It's like a mobile gacha game. I really love that game. It has its quirks. The translations and localizations are a little bit off, but I enjoy the art style. I love the music. The setting is really, really cute. The concept is fun. So while I was playing it off stream, I was like, I wasn't even going to stream. And I was like, you know what? I would love for like people to get introduced to this and see if they like it. And I saw that so many people were already playing it. So we're like, show me who you got. Who do you have? What skins do you have for them? So that's been my kind of big off stream one. But also for something that's not mobile, because I play a lot of mobile games. Something not mobile has been Vampire Survivors. I'm addicted to that game on my Steam Deck. I'm in it to win it.
I actually found that game on the Google Play Store. And I had this moment last year, around this time actually, where at like 10 p.m. after I've decided like, okay, I'm shutting it all down, the house is closed, I'm done for the night, I'm going to bed, I would open up my phone and play that for 3 hours. Would be 1 a.m. and I would be like bloodshot eyes on my phone playing Vampire Survivors. And it has become such a favorite of mine to watch other people play, because like I know what the chaos is like for me. But watching it for other people, I'm like, yeah, you don't know what you're going to do either. I never know what I'm going to do.
It's so fun. It's really refreshing because it takes two genres that I really like, bullet hells and roguelites, and kind of reverses it in a way. And you just have all these pretty particles. You have these noises. The sound design is immaculate. It's an ADHD very good game
for sure.
1,000,000%. It really is. Hey, they knew who they were catering to.
Yeah. I think the other thing about it is that it has this, like, there's no dialogue, none. But it has a story to it. There's, like, a weird story to it. And I don't know what it's about or who it's about or why, but I just know that it's there. And when it pops up, it's kind of creepy in a way, that like I am not expecting, but it's there. There it is. The story of Vampire Survivors.
Honestly, whatever it is. I feel like those kind of games do that so well. Like I like a story that's like, if you look for it, it's there and it's fleshed out. And it's a little bit like, oh, it's kind of got my hairs up on the end of my skin, you know? Yeah. Like, I feel that way with like Dark Souls. I feel like people only think of like the combat so much. I'm not good at those types of games. But my best friend, she was a really big Dark Souls content creator, and I watched her. But it was the lore that I got from this stuff that I was like, Oh, my goodness. That's actually really in-depth and kind of cool. And I got into watching Dark Souls content solely for the lore, because it's so deep, but you wouldn't really get it unless you're looking for it.
You really have to be paying attention to find the like the really good lore too in a Dark Souls game. And I have a friend who's the same way with Elden Ring. He loves Elden Ring's gameplay, but also spent like every minute he could just exploring and piecing together lore tidbits and stuff like that. Like the lore is there, and you know, they spent a lot of time working on it, and you better go look for it. Very good. Well, we're going to take a quick break just to, you know, wet our whistle. Talking is thirsty work. When we come back, we've got gaming news stories. We're going to talk about the finals. We're going to talk about Bungie. And we're going to talk about Remedy. All interesting and unfortunate in some cases stories. So we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with more show.
Welcome to Nameless Monsters. We are an actual play podcast playing Monster of the Week this season. Travel to Triple Springs with Brad,
This is gonna blow your mind. I don't know if you've ever had s'mores, but if you've never had them with Reese's peanut butter cups, then you've never really had s'mores, right? You know what I'm saying? Okay, so first, and he goes through the whole process, makes him the s'mores, passes it across, and then just watches him with this big goofy grin on his face for him to take that first bite, like, eh? Eh? See, dude, that's what I'm saying, man. So it's like s'mores are already a 10. Cranks it up to 11, bro.
Mags has her 4-inch binder spread out in front of her, loose leaf papers everywhere, pens sticking out of her hair, and she starts chanting with her eyes closed, finishes the chant, checks the page, says, nope, nope, that's wrong, and closes her eyes again and starts all over.
Ann Morris.
I've never driven a car before, and then they gave me this car, and they told me to drive 10 hours away, and, like, they know I don't have a license. I had to put that on my paperwork, and they still gave me the car, and they still told me to drive the car so that I can go find this guy, and I'm, like, pretty sure I can't find people because, like, I'm not like, a detective or anything. Like, my major's communications, and that's not a real thing.
Adventuring every other Wednesday beginning September 7th. Nameless Monsters, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to the show. So, as I said, we've got some gaming news stories with this week, and we're going to start with The Finals. The Finals, if you didn't know, is an upcoming multiplayer PvP FPS, say that 3 times fast, coming soon to Steam. It's being developed by Embark Studios, a studio based in Stockholm. During a podcast, which is produced by Embark Studios, Carl Strandberg and Andreas Almstrom, sorry if I'm getting your names wrong, the audio designers for The Finals responded to the question about voiceovers. Specifically, they sound so real. Are they real voices? By responding that no, they're not. They are text-to-speech AI that handles all the voiceover for commentators. The designer said that the reason is that AI text-to-speech is finally extremely powerful. It gets us far enough in terms of quality and allows us to be extremely reactive to new ideas. The designer said this allows them to get a voiceover in hours rather than months. Naturally, the response has not been so good from fans and voice actors alike, with voice actor Zane Schott, sorry if I'm getting your name wrong, tweeting, quote, "Why the fuck do AI voice people act like hiring voice actors is some kind of arcane ritual? I've knocked out entire games worth of audio in 2-hour sessions. It ain't that deep." So yeah, first thoughts, burning thoughts even.
I already feel so strongly about this because we talk a lot in our community about AI. We have so many people that are in, like, the tech field. We have so many people that are in the gaming industry. There's so many people that are, like, influencers or streamers, whatever you want to call them. And we just feel that AI is lazy when it comes to using it in a studio mindset. Mm-hmm. I think that, like, personally, I feel like you can do so much more with a human person recording these lines. But then at the end of the day, it just sounds like, oh, money, 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 money. And mm-hmm, I think that's like, especially in this climate for development, it's kind of like making or breaking the impact of a game.
Right. There's something to be said too about the quote that they said, it gets us far enough in terms of quality. And I went and I listened back to some of the audio that they highlight as being far enough. And it's like, is it though? Like, do you really think that the AI does a good enough job rather than just hiring someone to say these lines for you? And they're not difficult. Like, you know, the voiceovers are not monologues, right? They're not Metal Gear Solid, Hideo Kojima written monologues about the Ides of War, you know, Civil War, World War II. It's just a guy yelling like, oh, goddamn, the sniper wolves didn't do the goddamn thing. And it's it's like, you know, I could do that in a day. In less than a day. I could do that in 5 minutes. You give me a script, I read it a few times, you pick the one you like, and we're off to the races. Like, it doesn't make sense to me that you would then plug into the AI and have it spit out a robotic jargon, and then you're like, oh, well, that's good enough. Like, no, people are going to notice that, and they're going to be upset about it. Like, do better, do better, do better, do better.
Right. They're, like, banking on, I'm pretty sure, because the game is, I enjoy the game. The game is very high octane, fast paced, and you don't really notice that the announcers sound so uncanny until you're, like, watching a stream. Like, so watching a stream of someone playing it, I was like, oh, that sounds weird. Oh, that's off. And then when my friend was like, oh, they're AI, and I think you pointed out to me too, I was like, what? I had to look into this because I could not, like, I couldn't, but when you, like, hear it, you're like, actually, yeah. But when it comes to that quote, like you mentioned, it's to get us far enough in quality, like, that just says far enough, like, oh, it's just good enough that people won't really notice it or care about it. We're just trying to push numbers here.
Right. Exactly. And it to your point, it does look like, I haven't played it yet, it does look like a very fun game. And I do think that they could have gotten away with it in a way, right? Like, the game is cool enough on its own where it could have carried it across the finish line. But then you kind of slap voice actors and players in the face by feeding them, like, you know, your kind of meh opinion about voice acting or voice actors by using AI, right? It kind of feels like if you're not going to go in with your, you know, your full heart in the game, you should just, like, not have the voiceover lines at all. Like, just let the game do its own thing.
Right. I feel like, I think that they don't realize how much of the impact that a voice actor will have to bringing a game or bringing a world to life, you know, because you'll play a game like Destiny, for instance. It's not just the character's dialogue that makes them so likable or hateable. It's the delivery from the voice actor. And I feel that if you want to get emotion, you can even, like, get a shoutcaster. There's no reason to not hire anybody. There's so many people that are wanting to get into voice acting. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to get, like, $1 million, billion, trillion-dollar actor. You can get, you know, a live streamer that hosts tournaments in their free time that would be interested in doing it, and pay them a nice, you know,
Kamijace Gaming. You can hire Kamijace Gaming to do your goddamn yelling.
You can use Mona Vassell or Alicia Reset to do your goddamn yelling, because I do love to yell.
I enjoy the yelling sometimes. You wouldn't know it by the sound of my voice in this podcast, but I'll yell into a microphone for some money. Does that make sense?
Right. I likewise, I would also yell into the mic for some money.
It's a shame. It really is. And I hope it doesn't set, like, a precedent, right? Because these are really cool games that deserve the time and, as we're saying, the money put into it, right? Like, if you're going to go whole hog into developing a game that is this cool, that runs this well, that looks this good, destructible buildings and all kinds of amazing things in it, put all of it in, right? Put your whole heart into all of it, and, like, really make it into something that is a well-rounded experience from start to finish.
I concur. Gamers aren't just mindless people, you know. We do appreciate the touch of artistry, the deep humanizing feeling of things. And I really do feel like we take, when developers and voice actors and everyone involved, musicians, composers, put a lot of work into things, it's so much more remarkable. You're impressed. You're like, wow, they've sat in that studio and recorded so many different branches of dialogue so that every game sounds more alive, like it's a real live cast event, whereas, like, oh, you just type this into an engine and press export, you know?
Right.
That effort isn't appreciated because it's we know the limitations of humanity, but when it's a computer, it's not anything that's impressive.
Exactly. exactly. And, you know, they tried to play it off by saying, like, we're using, like, real people's voices. Yes, but plugged into AI. You are not giving them any direction. You're not, like, giving the kind of human touch that this should have at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Embark Studios, do better. Please change your mind about this. The game is not out yet. It is still in, like, a beta. It's playtesting. You may have been one of the people to receive an email about the playtesting. I did. I'm special. But you still have time. You still have time to re-record these lines. You still have time to hire Kamajace/Monoracel as a team. So I'm just saying, just do it. Just do it. Speaking of hiring and firing, about 100 employees at Bungie were laid off on Monday. I'm sorry, that's not a good segue. About 100 employees at Bungie were laid off on Monday. This is according to Bloomberg and GeekWire, who report that multiple departments are affected by layoffs, including production, talent acquisition, and community management. This is also a stark difference in attitude from Bungie, who said in August that they were hiring new remote workers for a new project. Bungie is not alone in recent layoffs. Of course, Amazon has laid off workers at Twitch in March. Epic laid off 16% of its workforce in September. What do you got?
A truly, truly depressing, hurting time for that news to come, especially in the midst of such a big moment for Bungie, the verge of like a game announcement, and then also a new chapter coming next year, right?
Yeah, to Destiny 2.
Yeah. It's so many people, so many talented people. Like, I'm new-ish to like Space Odyssey shooters. Mm-hmm. And when I was introduced to it, I was actually really floored with like how meticulously made this universe is. It's gorgeous and it's beautiful and it sounds amazing. And you can tell that it's a labor of love for the people involved.
It absolutely is.
Sad.
Yeah. Destiny 2 is currently, well, Bungie and Destiny 2 are currently blaming low player counts for the reason for the layoffs. Let's see. They are saying the money Bungie was bringing in was reportedly running 45% below projections for this year. Now, I get it. 45% is a big number. But 45% below projections, that's not the worker's fault, right? That is someone way up above who has, you know, a bigger salary and time to look at projections. Because developers are not doing that, to say, here's where we should be. If we are not there, I don't think the solution is to lay off workers. Does that make sense?
No, it does, honestly. I feel it's a disparity between what is actually happening and then what management probably sees in numbers.
Right, right. Exactly. It's a numbers game to a lot of us, right? A lot of us like when things are reviewed numerically, kind of a 1 through 10, and these CEOs and corporate ghouls like when the numbers go up for their money too, right? And again, it's all based on projections, right? By this time, this is now November, so, you know, by the end of the year, we should be at X amount, but we're not. So I'm going to lay off all your people. Like, it doesn't click to me. It seems like if we're losing money, you do something to make more money, not, like, save it. Mm-hmm. And not even in a way that makes sense, right? If you want to save money, cut your own salary.
Hello?
Cut your own salary.
They're not going to ever do that.
Sorry. I'm like I said, I work for unions. I am I fight greed like tooth and nail all the time.
Oh, and I'm here for it. Stand with the unionized workers. Let's go.
Yeah. We've said this a few times, and I'm curious about your opinion on it. You know, in the wake of massive layoffs, we often see a surge in unionization efforts, especially in the gaming industry, where you know, we have a few gaming unions here and there now, but there's no real big kind of national gaming union the way there are kind of national teaching unions and stuff like that. So I guess what is your take and your hope, maybe, like, for unions or for video game workers going forward?
I honestly think that more people should unionize because it holds companies accountable for the way of not only treating their workforce as people, but also giving them what they need, you know? It holds them accountable. It keeps them in check. It's like a check of balances, you know? I think that the gaming industry has been long overdue for a unionization because it has been one of the most toxic industries for workers, the most demanding industries, because we all know about that crunch, you know?
Right.
People staying in for hours upon hours, sometimes through holidays, not seeing their family for like 48 hours, sometimes more, sleeping in offices, sleeping in the cars, not commuting home in order to meet quotas. And it's like, they have to do this because that's their bread and butter. Like, they have to do it to support their family, themselves, medical. It's a job, but jobs shouldn't demand you like that. It's not okay. So if this is something that is just the pebble in the lake to start a huge wave for unionization in the gaming industry, I say good. Like, these people need to be represented and they need to get what they're worth.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. It seems like it's hard for the gaming industry for some reason to really pick up when it comes to unions. We've had a lot of unionization attempts over the past couple of years, especially since COVID. The really big start of COVID in 2020. And what you get is, like, you know, you get the start of the union, the vote is passed, and they kind of get to negotiations, but then something funky happens, either through, like, intense union busting or through, you know, negotiations stalling out for so long that people just kind of give up and they, you know, go and accept other jobs and move on elsewhere and nothing, and it all fizzles out. And I guess my hope at this point is that we can establish some form of I don't know, like a national union in the way that there's like the AFT, which is the Federation of Teachers, or the AFL-CIO, where it covers a broader scope of unionization efforts across the country. For video gamer studios everywhere, because we gotta bolster up the defenses, so to speak, I think, at this point. Over the year, this year alone, 6,100 gaming jobs have been lost due to layoffs across just about every studio you can think of. 11 studios have been shut down, likely due to the similar reasons why these Bungie players have been let, or excuse me, these Bungie developers have been let go. Puny Human, Volition Games, which was a massive studio, Antimatter Games, Campfire Cabal, Kilu Games, Pixel Opus, and then of course layoffs across everything from Telltale Games to Twitch to Naughty Dog, BioWare, CD Projekt Red, even, right? CD Projekt Red having some pretty big wins despite the kind of fall off from the first release of Cyberpunk, having some layoffs as well. Niantic had some layoffs. Embracer Group, surprisingly, despite the fact that they've been buying up studios left and right, layoffs there as well. So, you know, it's affecting every sector, every section, every studio of video games. And, it, you know, if you think it doesn't affect you because you just play the games, I would urge you to reconsider. Any final thoughts on this?
No,
this one had me burning up.
No, I honestly, like, this is a really heated thing, especially for people that are involved in the gaming industry that aren't just like just playing the games to play the games. People that are like invested and like researching and looking into these companies, it's a huge deal because if we don't have people that have the jobs that are making these games, we won't have the games. And it's not just up to the companies to make sure that they keep these people hired. It's up to the consumers, the players, to understand that these are people too. It's a two-way street. Mm-hmm. And I really feel like there is a disconnect on all points, from the devs to the upper management to, you know, the consumer, and then between, because just looking at Twitter alone, you can see the cesspool that is the communication between all these things. It's so disjointed. It's so tone deaf. And for us to understand what's actually going on and get a better look into why these numbers are so scary for the future of game development, you could lose studios. We've seen so many studios sunset this year alone. 11 studios is a big deal, especially like big name studios. And I've watched a game mm-hmm. close down, Hyenas. Sega had to shut down Hyenas for the same reason, the layoffs. And, you know, that game was something that was had no issues that were, you know, foreseen. Everyone was waiting for it to come out, and before it even released, it shut down. So there's a lot more going on beyond just your little computer screen or your Xbox 360 or whatever the Xbox is now.
Yeah. Xbox Series XS. Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Well, hopefully, you know, hopefully the fight continues, right? If you see someone out there who is in need of a job in the video gaming industry, be sure to, you know, give them a little boost. Help them out. Let's find some place for our 100 Bungie companions. And for our final story, and perhaps in some fun and exciting news, Remedy has announced days after releasing Alan Wake 2 that a sequel to Control and remakes of Max Payne 1 and 2 are coming along. According to a finance report, anyway, Remedy says that Control 2 is in the proof of concept stage, and many of the other games are in some form of early stage of production as well. Additionally, a new project called Project Vanguard is in development as well. Vanguard is allegedly a multiplayer, quote, games as a service experience being developed with the help of Tencent. Additionally, the co-op Control spinoff, Project Condor, is currently in a production readiness stage, whatever that means. We've also heard that Alan Wake 2, of course, will continue on with some expansions. Two are planned, and they are on the way, but sites are focused on advancing the other projects. What do you got? First thoughts. Let's go.
Super exciting to see more titles come from this studio. Alan Wake 2, I am bubbling to get into that, first of all. So, I had never played Control. I've watched it, and it's very interesting, intriguing.
Yeah.
I feel like they're going to lose it over Control 2. I think that this is all really fun, good announcements. A multiplayer game by this developer too. And then, oh, Max Payne. Let me not forget Max Payne. Remakes? Like, come on, let's go.
Yeah. I never realized how much I enjoyed Remedy games until I played Control for the first time. When I saw Control, it reminded me of a game called Second Sight, which has nothing to do with Remedy at all. But I was very into it already because I love, like, psychic, supernatural, paranormal shit. And it's just, it fit all of those criteria so well in ways that I really wasn't expecting. And then I went and I played I don't think it's Quantum Break. Maybe it is. But I went and I played that game. I went back and I played Max Payne 1 and 2. And I was like, I've always loved Remedy games. I've always loved them. And so I'm very excited for Max Payne 1 and 2 remakes, especially with some updated graphics using their, Northlight engine?
Northlight engine.
Which is just a beautiful, beautiful storytelling engine. I'm very excited to get my hands on Alan Wake 2. I have not played it yet. I have been dodging spoilers left and right like a pro. I'm excited. I'm a little concerned about their multiplayer game. And the only reason I'm concerned is because they've never done it before. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what that looks like. And working with Tencent, in my opinion, is always dubious.
Yeah. The thing about it, though, is that it does give a little bit of hope for the success of the multiplayer, because you know that Tencent, you know the giants of online gaming, you know, Nexon, Tencent, NetEase, they're not going to touch it if it's not going to be profitable. So
that's true.
They're going to make sure that it works. It's just like, what is it going to look like beyond, you know, the first impression.
Right. Yeah, we'll have to see. I'm excited for the co-op for Control as well. I would love to know what that's going to look like, especially given the kind of setting for Control, which is basically a government building. Mm-hmm. I have no idea what we're going to be doing in there that Jesse Faden hasn't already been doing. So, yeah, Remedy Games.
Remedy Games. Also really looking forward to Alan Wake 2 expansions. I know that when we got the additional Alan Wake game, I forget what it's called, but it was like American Nightmare or something like that. I was losing it. I was like, more Alan Wake. Like, I love Alan Wake. So the fact that they're already planning to bring more stuff to Alan Wake in the future, I'm already, like, to put it a little crudely, my titties are tingling. Like, I'm ready.
I love it. I'm ready. All right, Remedy, hurry it the fuck up. I'm kidding. take your time. As we wrap up the show, we always do a quick run through of this week in gaming history, where we take a look at some releases that have been going on in the past, and we, you know, dig a little into them, have a little commentary. So starting all the way at October 29th, we have Fallout 2, which came out in 1998 for PC, 25 years ago now. Grand Theft Auto Vice City came out in 2002, 21 years ago for the PS2, and Call of Duty, the game that started it all, 2003, 20 years ago for PC.
That's wild to think about. Oh my god.
Yeah, that's why I like this segment, actually.
25 years?
Just for Fallout 2 alone, you know.
Right.
25 years. Grand Theft Auto Vice City, 2002. I got to that game late. I didn't get to that game until like 2005 or something.
Really?
So to learn that it came out 3 years earlier than I was able to get to it. Mm. Whoa. Bizarre.
I remember Grand Theft Auto Vice City was like, that was the shakeup in the whole series. It was like, whoa.
This is where we're going with video games.
Right. Like, that was, I remember, like, my cousin and I, we both had our own copies on our PlayStations, and, like, we're like, hey, did you get to this mission? Or I got this car. I found out the cheat codes to get a helicopter. Like, you know, like,
yeah, right.
That was the game to end all Grand Theft Auto games. Like, it was the beginning of a new era.
Yeah. Speaking of a beginning of a new era, October 30th, Jet Set Radio for the Dreamcast in 2000, 23 years old now, and Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3, 2001, 22 years old, came out for the PS1 and the PS2.
Two super iconic titles. I know people don't think that Tony Hawk's Pro Skater is so iconic. It's so iconic. Like, everybody played Tony Hawk's Pro Skater, but then also Jet Set Radio. First of all, the Dreamcast, ahead of its time, love that system so much. But Jet Set Radio was chef's kiss.
Absolutely. Have you played the spiritual successor to Jet Set Radio?
I have not. I actually was just told about this not even a few days ago, and I was like, they did a what now? So I have to play this game.
I wish I still had the VODs for my stream. I would show you, but it's a lot of fun. It is so much fun, and you're gonna love it. If you've ever liked Jet Set Radio, you will love Bomb Rush Cyberfunk.
Super excited. It is
fantastic. I have like 12 songs from the OST on my playlist, and I drive to work and I'm like, yeah, this is fine. October 31st, Super Castlevania 4 for the Super Nintendo in 1991, making it 32 years old now. Tomb Raider for the PlayStation in 1996, making it 27. Armored Core as well in 1997 for the PlayStation, 26 years old now. And Final Fantasy 12. For the PS2 in 2006, making it now 17 years old.
It's really wild to think about Final Fantasy 12 and it being 17 years ago.
That's correct, yeah.
That game is gorgeous.
Mm-hmm. For a PS2 game, very ahead of its time, I think.
Yes, very much so. And also, I feel like really lucky that this segment is having all these beginning of iconic games. Tomb Raider, yes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Lovely game.
Yeah, sometimes there's a week where there's like nothing going on for some reason. But like, this is a good one. Armored Core, which just got its sixth iteration recently. I've never played an Armored Core game. I got to play Armored Core 6 a little bit. I still have to get through it some more, but I love that game. It is so good. If you've ever liked Gundam and wished that you could be in a Gundam, go play Armored Core 6. Like, it's that good. It feels like that.
Say less. I love Gundam, so that's like probably the one anime thing that I probably am like, okay, I see what y'all are talking about, so I might check that out. I've never played an Armored Core game either.
It's one of those games where I've always wanted to play it, but I never picked it up, or it was never like on sale because I was poor. I am poor. But I got Armored Core 6 and it feels good. It feels real good. November 1st, Blood Omen, Legacy of Kain for the PlayStation in 1996, making it 27 years old. Crash Bandicoot, Wrath of Cortex for the PS2 in 2001, making it 22. And Castlevania, Curse of Darkness for the PS2 and Xbox in 2005, making it 18 years old. Old enough to go to war. Congratulations.
Please. I've actually never played any of these games, unfortunately. I've heard of Legacy of Kain, but like at the time that these games were coming out, I was not into that type of genre of games. Sure. That genre grew on me as I got older.
Mm-hmm. Legacy of Kain is a good one, a really good classic that I think they should revisit and do justice at some point, because it's just classically, you know, it's Crystal Dynamics, right? The same people who did Tomb Raider. So,
oh, is it really?
It's very much their thing. It feels almost exactly the same. And in fact, I think you can get Legacy of Kain, some of the Legacy of Kain titles on Steam. The older Legacy of Kain titles are indeed on Steam, as are the older Tomb Raider titles. But also we have I believe we have some updated Tomb Raider titles coming out soon. So maybe you wait for that, maybe not, who knows. Also, I think all of these games are now on sale. I just looked it up. Anyway, November 2nd, Spyro 2 Ripto's Rage for the PlayStation in 1999, making it 24. And Killzone for the PS2, 2004, making it 19 years old.
I remember everyone going off the rocker for Killzone. That was like the game.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. It was a very compelling, I should say, game for its time. But I think the real standout star in this category is Ripto's Rage. I love Spyro. I love Spyro so much. It's not aged well. I've been watching some folks play it recently, and I've been like, wow, that was in here. That
that
depiction of Asian people is in this game. Okay.
Oh, no. Cool.
But it is still, I am afraid, one of those nostalgia trips that is fun to go on despite the fact that it has not aged well. It was the 90s, you see.
Like, people have to remember that back then a lot of stuff was flying that we don't let fly now.
No, absolutely not. But to round us all off, for November 3rd, Crash Bandicoot Warped came out PlayStation in 1998, making it 25 years old. And True Crime Streets of LA, a very stupid game that is near to dear to my heart, GameCube, PS2, and Xbox in 2003, making it 24 years old.
You think it's a very stupid game? I love that game.
24, that's not right. Hang on.
Oh,
that's mathing. Incorrect math. Making it 20. There we go. Thank you for checking my math brain. You're welcome for other games. Oh, by the way, Max Payne, True Crime, other cop game, Dead to Rights, like clear copaganda games. I hate them for that reason. I love them because they're so, either they're Max Payne and they're super gritty and fun and have a good story, or they're True Crime Streets of LA, where you play a cop who's trying to solve like murders that are happening and it's very suspicious and it turns out to be like a supernatural god that's killing people. And you're like, wait a minute, what is this game about again?
Right.
So, like, they are complete copaganda, but in the worst way. And that's why I like them. So yes, it is absolutely a stupid game. Dumb. Just stupid. And finally, November 4th, Dynasty Warriors 4 Extreme Legends comes out for the PS2 in 2003, making it 20 years old. And Ratchet & Clank comes out for the PS2 in 2003 as well, making it also 20 years old.
Wow. I've never had the opportunity to play a Ratchet & Clank game, but let me tell you, my guilty pleasure is some Dynasty Warriors.
Oh my god, yeah. Just swiping a spear at a group of 90 enemies and juggling them for 2 hours.
So good. They knew what they were doing. They said, this is simplistic, but also you're going to play it and you're going to buy every single one of them.
You are going to play it. You are going to like it. And you're going to play every iteration that we put out every year for the next 80 years.
You know what? I like when that era where they started to make like other IPs, like the Hyrule Warriors one.
Yeah.
And then there was like the One Piece one. And then I just found one on the PlayStation that's like a bunch of different game IPs in one. I'm like, okay, y'all are getting into the gig that I like.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It was very good. Very good. All right, super. Well, we are basically at the end of the show. And always at the end of the show, we ask that you give our listeners a recommendation. Which game should they be playing or be on the lookout for?
Yeah, I know. I am looking forward to telling people to be on the lookout for Fashion Dreamer, which releases tomorrow, November 3rd. Mm-hmm. And then Super Mario RPG, which releases on the 11th. I'm a huge Super Mario RPG fan. I've been waiting for... We have been asking for this game since we knew that they were making Paper Mario.
Literally, yes.
So, super excited to get into that gig, 100%.
Very, very good. I'm very excited for those as well. I'm going to tell people, I have not been playing a lot of single player things. Oh, hang on. Shut up. I know what to do. El Paso Elsewhere. That game is doing amazing things right now. El Paso Elsewhere is made by a small indie studio led by Xavier Nelson. It is basically Supernatural Max Payne, which we've been talking about this entire episode.
Interesting.
It is Supernatural Max Payne. You play a man named James, I believe James Savage, who is going to kill his ex-girlfriend, who just happens to be the king/queen of vampires, Dracula. It is fantastic. It plays exactly like a weird Remedy crossover type thing. All the diving, all the pill popping, all the shooting, except you're doing it at supernatural monsters, and it is fantastic. It has an amazing soundtrack, done by one person. It's just a really, really good game. It's about, I think, $25-$30 on Steam. And I could not recommend it more. It's getting a lot of accolades and awards. Very good, positive reviews everywhere. Just give it a go, give it a go, give it a go. And finally, to finish off this episode, please let us know where we can find you on the internet if you wish to be found, and if you have anything else to plug.
I'll forever hide in the shadows forever. Sorry, no, I'm kidding. I'm super easy to find. My name on like Twitter and Twitch is Mona Russell. It's Mona Rice and then LLE. That's super easy. And I also have my musical project called Dreamscape Nexus. We're on most streaming platforms, Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music. The works. You can type it into Google. It'll show you where we are, Dreamscape Nexus, if you like to listen to music that sounds like video game music.
Very good. Very, very good. All right. As always, you can find me at CommyJaceGaming on Twitter, and you can find the Weekly Cooldown as well on Twitter at WKCooldown. You can also find both of those accounts on Blue Sky. Be sure to visit the Weekly Cooldown Instagram page. Visit wkcooldown.com for more news and other episodes. Come see me on Twitch sometimes at CommyJaceGaming as well. Be sure to leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Remember that your review, your 5-star review, helps the show get
passed around to other people who enjoy video game podcasts. So if you go on Apple Podcasts right now and click the 5-star review button, whoever is the CEO of Apple is like, holy shit, and they send it to some other guy. And then that guy hits 5 stars and it's just a whole big thing. And I will not explain any further than that because I don't know that that's true. Be sure to check out the links in the description, including, of course, our Humble Bundle for this week. And remember that you can support your favorite charities and support this show. Our logo and art is done by Corgian. Find Corgian on Twitter at Doghouse Corgian, DoghousCorgian. That's Doghouse Corgian on Twitter. And our intro music is done by Riki. Find Riki on Twitter as well at Dog_Noise, DoghNoise. That is all for the weekly cooldown. I am Kami Jace.
I'm Anava Selvasat.
And we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.